be brave and take some risks. Too many times I look back on the things that I did with the former band and thought I did not take up the opportunities that presented. So I guess do everything whilst you can and, you know, go for opportunities and things like, because it's the best time right now where it really is being probably embraced more so than ever.
Welcome back to Songlines, the series which shines a light on First Nations artists across WA. Over 6 episodes spanning the Noongar seasons, we hear from creatives across music, theatre, dance and television, paving the way for the next generation of storytellers. In episode 2, we find ourselves in Bunuru, or Second Summer, yarning with Jared Wall. Jared is a versatile cross-genre artist that made a name for himself in Boorloo as part of indie band Jake and the Cowboys, and more recently under the musical moniker of Bookskid. When he's not making music and sharing Noongar language and culture through song, Jared is working in the Youth Justice Department, working alongside the youth in our criminal justice system. It was a pleasure to chat with Jared Wall for Songlines.
I go by the artist name of Books Kid, so it's B-O-O-X, but it's Books if you want to...
I love that.
...say it properly. My daughter came up with the name.
That's so
4 years
cute.
Ago. Yeah, I used to play in a band called Jake and the Cowboys, so I was like, decided to go the solo road, and then I was like, oh, I said to my daughter, what's your daddy call his band? And because I was fresh out of name, so I was like...
You're like, what do I do?
Yeah, I was like, oh God, this is a hard process. She was writing down a whole bunch of names, and she wrote Books as in, like, read a book, but wrote it as in B-O-O-X. And I was like, that's kind of cool. I can use that. And then I added the kid on the end, and because I used to be a big Alex the Kid fan, if anyone knows Sega games. And then, yeah, there it is. I guess, yeah, more widely, I'm a Noongar boy with Wadani Bibbleman ties. So my family name is Hill Family. Wall's my dad's family's name. Kind of grew up in a little bit in WA, but spent a whole bunch of time over in Queensland 10 years when I was younger. Came back here for the high school years and things. And
I hear you are living the life as a musician, also actor now.
I don't know how good I am at the acting side of things, but
you did it.
Dabbled in.
I feel like doing an opera definitely counts. With Songlines, each interview is released over the course of the Noongar seasons, one each season. And in this one, we find ourselves in Bunuru, which is over the February-March period. I was wondering, do you have kind of any fond/specific memories of this time? Because, I mean, it's kind of the time where it's still really, really hot, but it's not quite the fun bit of summer anymore. It's a bit of summer where you have to...
Yeah, it's kind of
do things
like
again.
Getting into slightly cooler.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, you're not sitting in 40 degree heat, which is nice.
That is nice.
I guess February, March, from a music point of view, there's always a great festival happening at the end of that time.
Yeah,
Feb,
true.
March, which is Nanup Music Festival.
Yep.
And that's one that I played as Jake and the Cowboys, like literally 7-8 years ago, maybe, coming as Books Kid, playing my sets.
You spent time in Queensland and then came over here for your high school years. How was that, I guess, spending childhood over there and then coming over here for high school years? How different is it?
Yeah, it's pretty different, I guess. I was born here, but then pretty much when I was one, I think my dad was in the army and stuff, so we went across over to Queensland and I spent about probably 10 years over there, living over there, and then 2 years leading up to high school, moved back over here, but kind of lived all over the place over there. We were like floating about anywhere. Kind of lived in like inner Brisbane in a place called Oxley, but I went to a heap of different kind of primary schools just because we were moving around a bit, and I lived in Ipswich, if anyone knows Ipswich.
I've heard of Ipswich.
Something that always reminds me of that kind of area, I guess, is like I lived right down the road from what was Pauline Hanson's fish and chip shop back at the time. I was a kid walking into Pauline's store when she was still actually serving fish and chips.
Oh, wow.
So this is like mid-90s. So yeah, I think I was like eight. That's probably more reflective of my age. So I remember literally like walking from my place, you know, this little black fella walking in. For whatever reason, I had no shoes on or anything. I was walking up.
That's what
we
do.
It was hot as an inch.
Yeah.
So it's like I'd go there, go and order little fish and chips. And it wasn't the friendliest of towns, if I can put it nicely back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an experience, I guess, as a little young fella going into a shop where you weren't necessarily liked all that much. That's that kind of time. But
yeah,
like to think things have gotten a bit better since then. It's just one memory that sticks out. But I guess, you know, Brisbane, I've always loved Brisbane. Got family over there, dad's side's there, and always go back there to, you know, do different things. And they have much better surf over there. Whenever I go there, I try and go up to Noosa on the Sunshine Coast and things. And
talking about being a kid, was music something that you'd kind of been involved with as a kid, or was that something that came later in life?
It's kind of always been present, I guess. So my brother he used to play in a band, an R&B a cappella group. They'd wear their suits and everything, and they were called Aim for More.
Oh, I love that. So this is really like sweet.
Through the 90s, did some really good gigs and things. And if you lived in Brisbane when they were playing, you'd know who they were and who the guys were.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, I always saw him sing, and so I'd try and sing throughout school, and my dad bought me my first guitar and stuff, so taught me a few chords, and then I've just taught myself, rather, how to play.
So music is the form of storytelling, and is that kind of always also like been a part of your life in terms of the role storytelling has played as you've grown up?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've kind of, you know, been told different stories about heritage and things like that mum's always kind of instilled in us, and our family's got different people in the arts. I don't necessarily see myself as a great storyteller, or not a great songwriter as such. I find it hard to write about songs, more so about me, so I like to write in narrative and make up stories, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. It also makes a lot of sense how so many Indigenous people end up in the arts as well, because in so many ways that's kind of what we've done forever.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's embedded like into our culture.
Yeah.
I just think that's very cool. If you don't mind me asking, something that does unfortunately also play a part into how things are now and how we are able to engage with our culture is the Stolen Generation. And I know you've talked a bit about how your mum was a part of that. And I was wondering how that, if it's okay to ask, how that kind of affected growing up, but also how that's affected your work and your art.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, mum went to Sister Kate's when she was young, her and her siblings. So she had two sisters and a brother, and the sisters went to one family, and then their brother remained in Sister Kate's for quite some time. And, you know, it wasn't obviously a very nice place, but yeah, so they were disconnected from each other for a certain period as well. They didn't link back up. But obviously, you know, there's what comes with that is obviously the whole connection to family and connection to roots and all those kind of things. So, you know, lost contact with their parents and things like that as well. So, and obviously this was nothing that was by their own choice. Yeah, it was incredibly difficult. And I think I learned more about it as a teenager and as I kind of, yeah, as I've gotten older. And in terms of like my work and songwriting, like I've worked for Department of Justice for quite a while, and I've like worked with families and kids, particularly working with youth that have been getting into trouble here and there, but not necessarily, kids aren't inherently bad. So, you know, you're working with some families that have gone through trauma. It's kind of always been in some form in my life, working with people, I guess, whether it be sharing my music or in the other work that I'm doing from a music perspective, kind of comes through in some of the songs I write. Like my first track that I did as Books Kid, Hold My Hand, that was written about basically kids that, and the work that I did about kids that might need help. And maybe for some kids, it's those little offers of help, and whether it's one person or one little opportunity that might change trajectory.
That can absolutely change everything, yeah. And I think that, like, the arts, not only is it, you know, part of how, you know, how we are as a people in terms of our culture and how that's just kind of been embedded into it, but I think also it's a really helpful tool of healing as well, and of reconnecting and changing trajectories.
Yeah, definitely. It's such a nice healing process, and to be able to, you know, I'm attempting to write songs in language more, so just going through that process. And
it's interesting, isn't it, when you like starting to work with language, it's such a, I mean, it kind of boggles your brain a little bit. Talking about, you know, working with Noongar language, it makes perfect sense to go into the fact that you were recently in Coolbardie Wiradjuri with the WA Opera by the iconic, as ever, Gina Williams and Guy Gaus. How did you get involved in that project? What was the process like?
Yeah, it was really cool. I think I saw like the audition online somewhere, like on Facebook or something. And then I saw it and I was kind of thinking, oh, that could be kind of cool.
Could be fun.
Not really knowing kind of what it all meant and what it entailed. I kind of initially saw it as another kind of performance opportunity. The audition song was Gina's Wanju, so I think I did that, and then I did my own cover of a Nirvana track, I think, from memory. And then I got the call saying, yeah, we want you as the primary role of Wiradjuri. And I was like, cool, yeah, sounds great, I'll do it.
That's
and
incredible.
Then we had a whole bunch of time leading up to rehearsals and stuff, where we had to obviously learn the movement on the animals and things. We had to learn the language as such and proper pronunciation. I mean, that's still something that's ongoing, because it's so intricate
thing.
And there's these little nuances, and you say one thing slightly incorrect,
slightly out of context, and you're like, wait, because a lot of the words have double meanings.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly. And I've always got like Auntie Gina there on our backs.
Oh, absolutely.
Kind of saying, you know, say it properly, pronounce it right.
Always then, the emphasis on the first syllable, not the other ones.
So it's getting better, but going into it and where we are now with the opera, it was just so much more than just a performance opportunity.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It was just completely enriching from a cultural perspective, and like I'm learning my language. Like I knew bits and pieces here and there, and I'm certainly not fluent by any means. Getting more proficient. One particular rehearsal was the first time that we came to do my aria track in the opera, and we came together to rehearse that. And I think there was just so much emotion. So because it's like it's kind of an integral part in the opera where the story changes the trajectory of the whole thing, you know. Initially Kulbadi and Wardanga, they're brothers and they're friends, and but the relationship becomes strained and then it breaks. So I guess when we played it the first time, we just kind of thought, yeah, I don't know, emotion took over, and because it's hearing in language, it's storytelling.
It does something else. Like, performing in language is always such a complex thing. Like, obviously there's so much joy in learning it again, but also I think working on productions in Noongar can sometimes be so much more taxing than we realize until we're involved, because it's also entire emotional thing at the same time, learning a language that we never got to because
exactly,
reasons that are not very nice.
Yep.
I think the arts is such a fun way of learning language, by like learning it while also doing something that you really, really love.
Yeah, exactly. It was amazing. It was like having to do the movement and stuff at the same time. And then also, like, in addition to singing language, there was also dialogue sections as well. So there's conversations with the other cast and stuff in the opera. So yeah, there was a lot to learn. I was surprised we did it in the time frames that we had.
I know exactly what you mean. Just productions in language are so rewarding, but also a bit of a moment for one's brain.
Oh, yeah. I was like, September 2021, that was like fever crazy
dream.
Period.
Fever dream. Yeah. The whole thing, just a complete fever dream. Because I think the thing with it as well is not only are you rehearsing a show, but you're rehearsing a show in a language you don't necessarily understand super well. So there's all this translating going on at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. I guess like going from there, like talking more about your music, is you mentioned that you were in a band called Jake and the Cowboys and then you ended up going solo. What was it that kind of did a whole other thing?
I think it was like just the desire to want to keep making music, really. Like I played in Jake and the Cowboys for probably 7 or 8 years. We did a few different things and had some good opportunities, but then life kind of took a hold, I guess. So I still had a drive to want to do things, really. Yeah. So then I kind of took some time to teach myself how to use Ableton for music production stuff, and then, started making my own things, and then released the first track in 2018. Yeah, it was just a desire that I wanted to keep going, and I guess like as I've gotten a bit older now, initially I had dreams of, massive stardom and all that kind of stuff, but it's probably changed now where it's more I'm delving into kind of any realm that I can get into and influence people and influence and put my signature in different pieces, whether it be for songwriting, writing for other people, production, dipping into theater and acting, and
it's the desire to keep creating and
being
involved in it. Because I mean, we do what we do because we love it, and you always find ways to adapt and adjust, because the joy about the arts is you can never really do only one thing, because there's just too many people for you to only do one thing.
And it's tough just to be making ends meet, I guess, if you were to do that stuff solely. So like I feel like dipping into other things and being as versatile as I can is probably the best thing to do.
And that's why the opera would have been so cool as well, because it would have really like expanded.
Yeah, it's like massive. It was a challenge, and I wanted to challenge myself, and
you did it.
Yeah.
And it worked, and it was brilliant, and everybody talks about how good you were.
Oh, thank you.
So I think that's brilliant. Also, Books Kid is with your brother as well.
Used to be, yeah. He never liked performing, even though he used to play for an a cappella group. I think as he got older, he kind of hated. He's like, no, I don't want nothing to do with that. But he's got other things. He loves his studies and things, and he has all these other things going on too. Mm-hmm. And I guess, my focus was always doing the music stuff. Mm-hmm. And I still float him back ideas and lyrics and things, and he might give me advice here and there. But so it started out the both of us, Books Kid did, and then it just became myself, really. But he's always got a little bit of influence.
What was it like working with your sibling?
It was good. Like, we always worked well together. We gelled.
There's an understanding a lot of the time.
Yeah, really good.
No one knows you better than your sibling, who has literally grown up with
you.
And
we can be open about discussions and things and all that kind of stuff. So it always worked. And I think, like, I was always good at making melodies and stuff like that, whereas he is probably the better songwriter, to be honest.
The wordsmith,
like, he comes up with better stuff than I do, I think, anyway. Just worked. Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah, working with siblings is always an interesting time. Lots and lots of fun. along with your music as well, you work in youth justice. I know we've talked a little bit about it, but what was it that kind of propelled you into starting into that
space?
Work?
And... Yeah, I think it was probably my mum's influence, I'd say, because she's always worked in different realms like mental health and teaching and other sorts of things. So just kind of felt natural. I think one day I did the public service test when that existed a few years back, which is like some test you did to be able to be eligible to work in the public sector or something. But like I did that, and initially I did like clerical work and then just kind of worked my way up and then kind of fell into working with youth and have done it ever since then, really, in different realms. I've done a whole bunch of different roles over the years and now I'm more kind of managing staff and different things, but I love working with the kids and always enjoyed it. And mum was always into that stuff, so I think it was probably her influence that got me there. Prior to that, I was like working in bars and things.
As we do as young 20 somethings
trying
to figure out what the hell we're doing with the rest of our lives, which is a very daunting idea at that point in age. Something that's been talked a lot about recently, been talked about more and more as time's continued on, is how children are overrepresented in the criminal justice system. And I guess in your line of work, you would see a lot of how that ends up and what ends up leading to that. As someone who works closely with youth and in that area, what do you think it is that kind of needs to change so First Nations kids are less likely to end up in those positions? Because as you said before, kids aren't born bad. The kids aren't born to end up there.
Probably from my own personal point of view, I guess. There's definitely probably a lot of legislative change and things that need to occur. And with all sorts of relative acts relating to youth and things, because there are structures in place that are not supportive of young people, unfortunately. Probably one of the biggest things is legislative change would prevent certain things from happening.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many options.
I know we've talked about how healing the arts can be and how it's very good for that kind of thing. You have performed at the NAIDOC Week in 2018, the NAIDOC Awards in 2019, and the Ashfield NAIDOC Family Day, just to name a few of the things you've performed at. So often these events are just acts of healing within themselves, of community coming together to celebrate, to listen to music, to sing along to music. How important do you think is it? Because part of that obviously is the artists involved are First Nations artists. So how important do you think it is to get more First Nations artists up on stage and for more people to see?
Super important. I think the more artists and things that you can get on NAIDOC events or any kind of events in general is important. And I think like there's always a lot of talk around the space of festivals and things, paying the rent as such, ensuring that there's representation.
Yep.
Like, and particularly for where festivals, or my view is kind of like for where festivals are held and things, they should be inviting artists
from that area.
From that country to be able to perform as well. But I think moreover, like representation in festivals doesn't necessarily have to be an allocated spot for Indigenous artists. It should be
just part of it.
Hey, if there's an Indigenous artist who's like smashing it and doing well, or you know, look out for the up and coming artists that are coming through, like why not get more First Nation artists on the bill?
Absolutely. And I think like as for kids and teenagers and just to be honest, people in general, there's something so special about seeing people who look like you and who are like you on stage. When I think for so long we never really had much of that. And so often that is what can inspire people to know, oh, that is also an option for me. Like I don't have to do just what people expect of me or I'm told I'm capable of. But hey, I can also be like that cool dude on stage singing in language perhaps, or just singing in general and being tall and proud.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. And I think if you're someone who's behind the scenes trying to get more representation and things, it's kind of like, you know, perhaps festivals and companies, public sector agencies and non-for-profit who have particular kind of, whether it's reconciliation action plans and strategies and stuff. And I kind of think, maybe, you know, festival events should hold the same kind of...
Yeah, I mean, it would make
some
sense.
Some probably already do. I'm not, you know, fully versed on it, but like, you know, why not have that in there? I think everyone is at a time where we want to see more representation and things. We're as good as anyone else. So.
Just the perspective, I think, of First Nations people and the stories that we have are so important to be told as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the whole thing with Coolbardie. Like, that's not...
Yeah.
It's not like a made-up story. This is dreaming. This is stuff that's been like passed down.
It's about, you know, showing people who don't usually see that kind of work or hear those kinds of stories, hey, this exists.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about being bold. About being bold. That's what I thought was really cool, like about the WA Opera.
Mm.
It was it took on something that was not your traditional opera vibe.
Yeah.
You know, well, I guess, you know, if you think of opera, you probably think of something that's sung in Italian language or yeah, something like that. And I guess, and then you think of the audiences perhaps that attend operas generally. And then you have something like Kulbadi that goes to His Majesty's. Yeah, it was amazing. It's like, it's just the diversity of it. So it's by doing that in that space, our language has reached such a bigger audience again.
Absolutely. And saying, you know, we're still here despite everything that was done and how hard people worked for us to not be here. We are still here and still reclaiming as we go.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think was so exciting about that work. And it's about works in general that have to do with language and art in general with it all. So we are super lucky because you're going to play us a song today, which frankly, I'm really excited about. So can you tell us what you're going to be performing and possibly tell us a little bit about the track itself?
So this one is called Wrecking Ball. So yeah, Wrecking Ball is about people that come into your life and influence you to some degree, whether it's good or bad, but it's those people that are in your life for whether it's moments or a long time who have some impact and make an impact. So for me personally, this was about, so this one, yeah, more personally for me is about a friend of mine who passed away not too long ago, sorry. Yeah, and it's just about my experience and family's experience and things. And I guess I wanted to write the song in a way where other people could resonate with it. So I kind of floated ideas with a friend of mine. I originally wrote it as in like he, she kind of perspective. And then I bounced it back with my mate and he's like, wouldn't it be cool if you just got rid of the gender stuff and just completely made this so anyone can really relate? And I'm like, yeah, that's genius. Yes. And then, yeah, I was like, okay, I kind of replaced those words with like terms of endearment. So like honey and sugar and that kind of way. People can, anyone who's anyone in the world can just try and relate, resonate with it if they want to. And I guess the name Wrecking Ball is like someone who comes into your life, smashes it apart, whether it's good or bad or whatever degree.
So down, honey, I won't be late. And I will be here, I won't hesitate. So down, sugar, I will make up my mind. For I won't be far. Nothing left out here to fear. I will, I won't anymore. Oh, you like the wrecking ball put here.
First Nations musicians and artists, well, First Nations people in general, are the original storytellers. The fact that we're in the arts, so many of us are in the arts, is an extension of that in a lot of ways. So what do you hope for the next generations who are kind of growing up in a world where we get to see ourselves more as the storytellers?
Yeah, I think embrace it, really. Yeah, be brave and take some risks. Too many times I look back on the things that I did with the former band and thought I did not take up the opportunities that presented. So I guess, yeah, do everything whilst you can, when it's available, when it's presented, and, you know, go for opportunities and things, like, because it's probably the best time right now where it really is being probably embraced more so than ever. So I think if there's any time now, particularly if you want to tell stories and to be able to influence and become someone who's going to, you know, down the track mentor younger people again, don't be shy about it, I guess. And don't be afraid to seek out support from your own community, but also from, just from other artists in general as well. Like, there's a lot of good artists out there who also want to learn more too. I think everyone wants to learn more.
Thank you for joining us, Jared Roll, on Songlines. Yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to Jared Roll for sharing his story on Songlines. Our producer is Danielle Raphael, and our production consultant is Kobe Arthur Morrison. Thank you, Kobe. Our theme music is Quarlock by Mutkic, a.k.a. Clint Bracknell, with artwork by Wayne Ryder. My name is Cesare Kudishnaz, host of Songlines. Join me and Jaron for Yarn with Della Ray Morrison, beloved songstress, actress, and best.